Welcome to our show, Chris Graham, and I'll be joined by Jerry Carter, and we'll see if others join us as well here on a Friday, third podcast of the morning, Eastern time for us. We talked with Seth Meganson earlier today. He and I went through the Friday action in the NCAA tournament that would have been, and Crystal Graham and I were talking some news, Virginia coronavirus news updates. And we're going to bring Jerry in here in just a second to help us get through. Jerry likes to kind of give us some indications of what to do in a sports world context. I'm trying to text him right now. This will be the first time he's going to sign in through our podcast app, our Podbean app. And a lot of folks listening in out there who are on Podbean will know how this works. But Jerry's a first timer, so trying to. Let's see if that's Jerry or not. Let's see. Jerry, is that you?
Yeah, I think it is, Chris.
All right. So there you go. Your username threw me off. So, but I saw a big J in the logo. So that made me think, okay, I'm going to go with this. Hopefully it's Jerry. If it's not, it might be somebody who yells at me for a bit. But either way.
I gotta admit the username threw me off. I'm not sure where that came from.
So. yeah, that is a good one there. So, well, how are things going for you, Jerry?
Well, it's getting eerily quiet out here on the island, Chris. It's kind of slowed down to a crawl. Not quite what California is dealing with right now, but it's definitely a different feel in the air. No question that.
I would say that too. Here in Virginia, you know, I mean, at least for us, Crystal and I did a news podcast a little earlier this morning, and we talked about how, in a lot of ways, our lives aren't changed that much. We work from home; we've always done so, and there are a lot of times that we don't leave the house. You know, there are a lot of days we don't leave the house anyway. So, so I can't really tell you about the outside world because we haven't really been to the outside world for a while, but. I'm trying to be keeping up with my 6.2 mile runs around the neighborhood, and I've been doing that for a year too, where I just run around the neighborhood instead of going for long runs, you know, through the streets or on greenways or anything like that. I just run around my block. It's a quarter of a mile around, and so I've noticed a lot more people walking. At least I did some work outside. It's been really nice here the last couple of days. Mid 70s temperatures. I was able to go out and do some. I took my computer out on the back deck and transcribed the Bronco Mendenhall press conference for about an hour and a half last night while enjoying some fresh air. And boy, just a stream of people walking down the streets. It was great to see. You know, when I say a stream, not like people violating physical distancing rules. They were properly distanced, right? But a lot of people on bikes. I could hear kids in the distance playing hoops. So people are coping and trying to get through hopefully the next few weeks with something here. And in the meantime, it's tough because it's just so unusual. It's so unusual to have to go through all we're going through right now.
Well, the situation, and again, it's going to be different from place to place, town to town, city to city. But this is the time of the year that our island really starts to pop. It's obviously it's a tourist destination, one of the biggest ones in the Pacific Northwest. Normally, people are piling in by this time off the ferry boat each day. So definitely feels a little bit different. And the situation that we're looking at, Chris, that's what's so unique about this in my mind, is it's going to affect everybody and every situation in such a dramatically different fashion.
Yeah.
And because it's not something that's been dealt with before, it's not like there's a handbook you could open up and say, hey, let's do this. And it's kind of amazing, Chris, how much of an effect it's had by comparison to the sports world.
Yeah.
And you're in a situation to where one of the things that would be obviously the tournament is something that would be going on right now. And that's a big part of it, especially from a fan standpoint. But there are so many people trying to figure out what is the next step in their life. And you're talking about, in particular, once the tournament's over, the last thing that just popped up on my feed, no surprise, is that Anthony Edwards is saying, hey, I'm going to go, a young man from Georgia, most people consider the possible number one overall. Anthony Edwards, it's easy for him to say, yeah, I'm going to go pro. But, Chris, one of the things, and this was very obvious last year where UVA was concerned, one of the things that is new or newer to college basketball is the transition period, the stick your toe in the water type thing. And this time last year, we were wondering what was going to happen with Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy. And I don't think we were really wondering about DeAndre Hunter.
Right.
But all of the players outside of Anthony Edwards and a handful of others who clear cut know the next thing that they're going to do is sign up for the NBA, there's a lot of players that are going to be in limbo. And this was something that I got to admit, it, I paid more attention to it once Calipari said it when all this first happened, is you have all of these players that are in college, and some of them are student athletes, and they are indeed there for their education, but you also have quite a few of them that are in the transition period of, I'm going to take this and use it to get me to the next level. And I'm not sure how that's going to play out and how many people that's going to affect going forward.
I agree. Because, you know, for guys who are thinking about going out as rookies, it's one thing. There's a rookie salary cap and rookie salary pay scale. So, you know, it's not like, you know, back in the days before when it was a Wild West, NFL and NBA both had a Wild West of, you know, remember that one year Glenn Robinson was the number one pick and he got a $100 million contract. And that's what sort of started in the NBA. Hey, we're giving $100 million to unproven guys here. We got to fix this. So if you're Anthony Edwards, you know, maybe going out and declaring now and staying in the draft is a smart thing to do because, it's, you know, you're going to make whatever amount of money you make wherever you're picked. That there's a, you know, there's a slot. I mean, you know, one picks get this much, two, three, four, five, et cetera, get, you know, slotted in. The impact's going to be in the NBA, at least. I'm not sure about the NFL. We're seeing crazy money being thrown around the NFL right now because I think a lot of us presume that, you know, whatever the restrictions we're in right now are going to be relaxed. I think that's a safe assumption, but by the fall, you know, and certainly the NFL seems to be operating on that assumption. And I think it's, I actually think it's a pretty safe assumption that by the fall we will, but it's not the fall, it's March. and March is, this is normally big NBA time. We'd be right now in the middle of playoff races, seeding races, there'd be teams tanking. But importantly, from an NBA business standpoint, there'd be lots of people buying tickets to games, lots of people buying merchandise at games and drinks and everything else. And there'd be lots of us watching on TV. We'd get into April, mid-April, we'd be watching playoffs. And that right now is very much up in the air. I just saw an interview with Dr. Anthony Fauci, the face right now of the positive part of the response to the coronavirus in the U.S. And he said to expect that the social distancing measures will have to continue for several weeks. Now, like, he talked about social distancing measures continue for several weeks. I know, and I can only presume that the major sports leagues, the NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, are trying to figure out what they can do to perhaps put their guys under some sort of quarantine so that, you know, they can, you know, get under a quarantine that can be actually a positive where they can actually play games sooner rather than later. I know the Big Three, the three-on-three basketball league, is talking about doing that with its players, basically quarantining everybody and then being able to put on a Big Three tournament. But I say all that to say this. If the NBA loses a significant amount of games, they've already obviously lost at least a week of games, and if they lose several more weeks of games, both from a attendance standpoint, but also more importantly, a TV standpoint, that could be a big issue. I mean, obviously, if they have to shutter the season for some reason, which I don't think is going to end up being the case, but if they do, let's just say, you know, worst case scenario, they do, salary caps next year go down dramatically. The salary cap is tied to the team salary caps are tied to a percentage of league revenue. So, you know, unless there'd be some special dispensation, you know, a lot of teams who have guys signed, you know, you think you're good on the salary cap for the next several years. You know, you may have to make some hard choices. You may have to, there may have to be some waivers for guys who are existing and, you know, just restrictions on going out and getting new free agents. But yeah, from a business standpoint, that could be a big issue for the NBA. I don't know as much, you know, if baseball is able to get in 100 games, you know, certainly there'll be a bottom line impact, but, you know, they don't have a salary cap in baseball. They have the luxury tax threshold, and so it's not quite as pronounced there. And again, I think we look at it and say the NFL may avoid the worst of this from a business standpoint. And again, you're seeing them throw all that crazy money out there. So I say all that to say, guys like Anthony Edwards, Jerry, like we, and you've been talking about him for a while, I know, because you have, you know, the ties to Georgia, like you have ties to so many places, if I'm advising kids right now, if you are an NBA player at the college level, if you're a surefire NBA player, I just go ahead and jump ahead, because maybe as a result of doing that, if you just go ahead and jump in and stay in the draft, you can hire an agent. That agent can take care of you in some ways. You know, agents can advance you money once you've given up your amateur rights, and you know, maybe take care of whatever training needs you may have and that kind of thing. That may be a smart business move for guys like Anthony Edwards.
Well, again, Chris, I think Edwards is doing what's best for his situation. But the other thing that has really has become a major tool in college basketball. And I'm just starting there because that's what you and I are normally doing, is talking about college basketball. But the other thing, Chris, that has become vital is the transfer portal, if you will, and then also the number in a separate category of graduate transfers.
Yeah.
You're in a situation where I just want to look just for a few minutes, look at this through the eyes of the college athlete. Again, Anthony Edwards on the top of the food chain is somebody who, hey, we know this guy was going. We knew he was going from day one. But how many players right now are in limbo? And not only from the players, Chris, being in limbo, but to a degree, the coaches being in limbo. You're sitting here and you're trying to, first of all, you're trying to accept the fact that your season didn't have the end that anybody wanted it to. I guess the only team that could possibly be happy at this point would be Kansas, because they did get the final poll number one for what that's worth at this point. But now you have to start looking, and I would say, again, starting with UVA, UVA's situation is probably as safe as anyone's from the fact that you already know who's coming in. I don't think there's anybody that's looking at this that you might leave. You might lose to an early entry, but you're in a situation to where, from a scholarship standpoint, from a coordinating standpoint, you're having to ask yourself how many people are going to be affected by this and what is the solution. You have the, you know, when you're sitting there and you have this much writing on this process, and we don't know, and that's probably the scariest part of it, we don't know when it's going to end. And in between now and when it ends, the question is, when is it going to lighten up a little bit? Yeah. When will we have a better idea? One of the things that I got a kick out of this week is different people are announcing, you know, their intentions. And one of the things that popped up that caught my eye was Joey Baker going public and saying, hey, I'm going to be here for year three. And I'm sure anybody that isn't aware of Joey Baker's situation is thinking, well, certainly this guy wasn't thinking he's ready for the NBA. No, that wasn't what Joey Baker was saying. He's not saying, hey, I'm going to pass on the NBA. Joey Baker's saying, I'm coming back here. Because the thought process was, he hasn't had the first 2 years of his stay, he hasn't had the career that people thought he might have had there. And what do you do in that situation? If you're not happy where you're at in this day and age, you just push the button and you find someplace else to be happier. So from a roster standpoint, at least now, someone like Joey Baker knows that it's his intention to come back and play basketball at Duke next year, where you have two, by my count, already two dozen people that have come out and said, hey, what we're going to do is we're going to enter into the transfer portal and see how this thing plays out. I'm just not sure that the average person has looked at this and thought about what could be the long-term ramifications of this particular dead period, if you will, especially where NCAA men's basketball is
concerned. Now, that's a great, great point. And I'll talk a little basketball, but I'll talk more football just because this issue is also affecting football coaches. And I was on a call. I guess technically I was on a Zoom. I didn't know anything about Zoom until yesterday, but UVA football coach Bronco Mendenhall, using the technology of the Zoom app, a lot of us Virginia reporters were able to jump on with him and ask him questions about how he's dealing with it. But I will say from a basketball perspective, there actually is one potential issue, no, not issue, potential good thing for UVA basketball fans. Jerry Ratcliffe, on his jerryratcliffe.com site, broke this news the other day. A former Harvard forward, Seth Towns, he's narrowed his list down. He's a grad transfer. He actually have 2 years of eligibility remaining because he graduated early. Also he sat out a year with a red shirt because of an injury. But Seth Towns has narrowed his list of destinations to Virginia, Kansas, Michigan, Maryland, Ohio State, and Syracuse. A pretty hearty list there. But this guy, now he had to sit out the 2018-2019 season, and then he went ahead and sat out this year too. He had surgery, so that would be a question. He's a guy who was he was the Ivy League Player of the Year as a sophomore, and then he had to sit the last couple of years out. But as a sophomore, averaged 16 points a game, shot 42% from the field, 44 from three at 6'7". And I'm looking at a picture of him. He looks like a stout 6'7". He looks like a Malcolm Brogdon type physically. And so he's narrowed his choices down to several elite programs, including UVA. Now, one issue that they'll have, because he's a grad transfer, he's narrowed his list down now. You know, no one will be able to, at this stage, no one will be able to, have him go through any kind of physical exams, have their doctors look at him, so to speak. That's an issue. Talking with Bronco Mendenhall yesterday, he talked about, I won't go into all the detail because that could take a while, and you and I might want to break that down into bits. But regarding player issues, in terms of grad transfers and that kind of thing, UVA had a couple guys enter the transfer portal. Seneca Millage, one of them, a running back that expected to maybe get some carries next year. Mendenhall mentioned that there are some possibilities in terms of the transfer portal impacting Virginia in a positive way, maybe even a grad transfer or two. But part of that issue, again, is that coaches can't meet face-to-face with guys right now. So this is the time of year when decisions are made both by basketball players, but also a lot of football players make decisions here in the spring about where they're going to transfer to. They're in the portal now, and you're limited. And it's not unfair for anybody. It's across the board. But Mendenhall was talking about the challenges of being able to. There's a lot of effort that has to go into making it seem as much like the old process as possible. When you make decisions about accepting a transfer into your program, for example, I mean, you want to sit across the table from them. Maybe you want to talk with their parents, and you can't do that now. You can use technology, but it's not quite the same. So he was talking about how you have to make it the same. Also, this is a time of year for coaches, football coaches, where they're making contacts. You know, we don't see this. We think football coaches work from September 1st, college football coaches, September 1st until December 1st, then they play their bowl, and then they go play golf the rest of the year. But this is a time of year when they're out reaching out to teachers, coaches, guidance counselors in high schools for their future recruits and making those contacts and reinforcing those contacts just to keep up with potential recruits for their programs. And again, that's also shuttered right now. A lot of things. I mean, we could talk, Jerry, about training programs. Bronco Mendenhall went into great detail about what they're trying to do to keep their athletes in good shape. Remotely, keep them on task class-wise. But, yeah, there's a lot right now impacted schools are basically colleges and universities. I don't know that there are hardly any, if there are any, that have held out and said, we're going to try to come back this semester with physical learning. Everything's gone online. And so you're not going to have those kids around until at the earliest, as Bronco and Mendenhall mentioned. You're not going to have those guys back on campuses until summer sessions. And that's definitely presenting distance challenges.
But just referring to the young man you were talking about that played up at Harvard, obviously if he's at Harvard, he's playing for Tommy Amaker. And the conversation came up when his situation was brought up, and one of the schools that would be interested in his talents for those next 2 years would, of course, be Duke. Amaker played where? He played at Duke. So somebody asked the question, well, hey, why don't they get in the mix for this? Well, you got a couple of problems, and you just described one of them. You can't be in contact. You can't go through the process of trying to do business per norm. So everybody realizes that there weren't any games yesterday. Everybody realizes there aren't any games today. But it's going to be interesting, Chris, to see what the long-term fallout of this is, as far as, I mean, last year, and you might have the numbers in front of you, I know that I don't, but look at the number of people that left early and the number of people that transferred and the number of people that transferred as graduate transfers. And think about every one of those people for the time being is very much in limbo. And when you're sitting there and you're trying to piece together your roster, then we have the other question that has now been answered. The question was, were they going to flirt with trying to let players, student athletes from the winter sports come back and be given an extra year of eligibility? Yeah. If that had happened, and I'm now under the impression that it's not going to happen, if that had happened, it would have made a handful of people really happy, but at the same time, it would have added a whole nother layer to the chaos that is going to be people's rosters, both come fall for the football. And I think more importantly, not that basketball is more important than football, but with football, you've got 80 or 90 people in your program to try to go forward with. Where in basketball, you're limited to roughly 13. Different animal as far as you can't have a lot of question marks on a 13-person roster. So again, you have to ask yourself, how do you lay out a plan? And first of all, whose plan is it to lay out? But, you know, the NCAA obviously has a lot of things that they're dealing with. And I've read a number of stories about, even Adam Silver was saying, hey, I feel like that once we made the decision, everybody kind of followed suit. And obviously referring to the NBA. And I'm not sure if that how true that statement is, but from a sports standpoint, it looked that way. It looked that, hey, once the NBA said, hey, we're not going to play anymore, everybody else kind of fell in line. But the decisions that the NCAA are going to have to make are not connected to any other organization in any other sport. How do you possibly go about having a day where you're saying, okay, it's business as usual now? How would you come about having that day?
And for our listeners out there, I want to remind, one, I've had a couple people try to call in. I want to have interaction with our audience, but if I haven't been able to vet you, I'm a little leery of taking a live call, so to speak. But you have the ability to input a message actually right there on the app. If you want us to address a particular topic, please feel free to jump in there and do that. And I'm not trying to... I'm not trying to be rude, I guess, when I don't take calls. I've had, I think, three people try to call in, which I love the fact that you want to interact. Let's just interact, though, on the message board there, because, again, I'm just a little leery of kind of giving a live mic to somebody I've worked in TV and radio for a number of years. Live mics are scary sometimes. So that said, Jerry, I think you're talking basketball a little more, and I'll go back to football just because that Bronco Mendenhall press conference is still in my mind. And you ask about who's making plans. And Bronco Mendenhall, I mean, for those who, I guess those of us in the Virginia sports media who've gotten to know him over the past 5 years, he's a very meticulous man. I remember the first time I met him, I thought, this guy doesn't strike me as a football coach. He seems like the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, a very detail-oriented, very reasoned, calm speaker. And you can just tell that he's a very thoughtful person. And when I say that, I mean, just he's a very organized thinker. And so he talked yesterday at length about his plan here. And when you start thinking about it, with an 85-person scholarship limit, plus you've got maybe 8-10 walk-ons, plus your trainers, plus your assistant coaches. Boy, I should look at the list to get the official number, but it seems like between 12 and 15 assistant coaches, plus then your support staff. I mean, you're talking about an organization with maybe as many as 150 people that you're trying to now organize remotely. He talked about how he and his coaches are having daily staff meetings, just like they always do, but now they're using Zoom technology to be able to have those staff meetings because they're all kind of quarantined in place at various places across the Charlottesville-Albemarle County area here locally in Virginia. But then, so here's what he said. He said he's operating under the assumption that he will not have players on grounds, as we call campus at UVA. I'm a UVA alum, so I gotta say it right, but then also explain to people what the heck grounds means. He's operating on the assumption he won't have people on grounds, his players on grounds, until August 1st, which would be the start of fall camp. And so he's saying that to say he would love it if it comes back sooner, if they do come back for the summer sessions. There are two summer sessions at UVA. A lot of football players load up on classes in the spring and in the two summer sessions so that in the fall they can take a couple classes and then just be able to obviously focus their time on their travel and everything else related, and practice and games related to football. So they load up in the summer. And when they're there in the summer, that's great because then, you can have them working with your training and conditioning staff, strength and conditioning staff, I should say, have them on a regimented schedule. In fact, they'd be on a regimented schedule right now as well. UVA was set to start spring practice soon. UVA, Virginia Tech, Carolina were the only three ACC schools who had not started spring practice yet. Everyone else was in varying stages of their spring practice. UVA, Tech, Carolina did not get spring practice. And so that's going to be an issue for them to deal with, obviously, next year. But so Bronco says August 1st. So here's what we got to do, he says. You have position coaches. You have offensive line, defensive line, wide receivers, running backs, quarterback, linebackers, secondary coach, special teams coach. He's divided it up so that all those coaches daily now have to check in with their guys in their group and basically, hey, how are things going? He said they've given the guys a schedule. You have a wake-up time. Obviously, you have your class time, your online class time. Nutrition time. They're trying to make sure, they're trying to check in and make sure they're getting the proper nutrition. But here was an issue I hadn't thought about. I mean, you kind of think about that and it all seems logical, let's make sure they're doing stuff and we're getting paid money to make sure that they're doing the right things. If they were on grounds, it's easier to monitor, but they're not. So here's what we do. Here's the thing I hadn't thought about, Jerry, but from the standpoint of fitness and conditioning, okay, so they're not at UVA, which has state-of-the-art weight room. I've been in it. It's amazing. Like a lot of top-level Power 5 conference programs. It's amazing. And you can get the guys into different places. They can do the squat rack. They can go to the bench. They can do the various other things that you need them to do. They don't have that now. You can't just bring guys in. And gyms are mostly closed, too. I know here in Virginia, at least, by order of the governor, gyms and fitness centers, I guess, can stay open with less than 10 people, including the training staff there. One gym nearby us, where a friend works as a trainer, on these nice days outside, they've actually been doing things with like the CrossFit concept of flipping tires and things like that outside to be able to get out in the fresh air. But if you're a football player and you are UVA football player, any college football player, and you're at home right now, Now, you may have your own setup in your basement or in your garage, you know, with weights, free weights, whatever amount you might have at home. There are some players, Bronco said yesterday, that don't have weights at home. They always just lifted weights at the gym when they were coming up through high school and of course, lifting weights at the gyms at UVA. And so now they've had to devise some training plans for guys who are stuck at home with no weights to be able to do basically body weight exercises, push-ups, planks, free weight squats, of course, lots of running. But, you know, and the presumption on the part of this training schedule that they've put together is we're not going to have them again until August 1st. We don't know if they'll be able to lift weights much this spring or summer. So, and then he said, here, think about this now. I've got linemen who don't have access to weights who have to then come back and start playing college football. And so there are just, it's a myriad of things. When you start diving down into this, wow, it is amazing to think what we just take for granted in daily life. And when it goes away and having to kind of account for it, it's mind-boggling, actually, Jerry.
Yeah, there's so many, like I said, so many different layers to this process. And again, when you're talking about football, you're talking about an entirely animal, if you will. It's a situation to where, you know, there's talk in the NBA and the NHL and even the MLS is concerned about what will it take, you know, for the players to get back ready. But when you start looking at, especially the offensive linemen, the defensive linemen, you're going to have to look at this and ask yourself, how do you make that adjustment? Because they are student athletes. You still have to be thinking, you know, from the ask, you know, along the lines of let's make sure they're safe. Let's make sure that they're healthy. It's not a situation to where I'm sure your average NFL lineman, for example, who's got a few million dollars in the bank, has a home gym, has the ability to do all the things that needed to get done. So you have to ask yourself, again, we're hung up in the immediate impact of, darn, we can't watch basketball games today. But now, when the NCAA, Chris, made the decision to say, hey, we're just going to do away with the spring, I'm sure there was a lot of people who said, what are they thinking? Who now, if you ask the same question, might be saying, wow, that's looking pretty smart right now.
Well, I mean, yeah, things happened so quickly last week. We're now a week plus past it. It was last Wednesday and Thursday when this was really coming down, I guess. I don't want to be one of those, and that's why I was a little flustered that some people trying to take credit for things and others, you know, kind of casting blame on others. Because this is something that, you know, it's much bigger than sports. It's much bigger than any conference or the NCAA or anything else in terms of the response. And there's honestly still a lot of people at the governmental level questioning the current approach. There was an editorial in the Wall Street Journal today saying that, you know, when you start looking at numbers, it's not adding up. And, you know, do we need to risk our economy for this? And so there's still a lot of hand-wringing about the wisdom of the overall national approach. So, and we'll probably do that forever. I mean, we're going to live through this. And if we're, you know, those of us listening, you're fortunate enough to live and be able to dissect this and do an after-action report and make our own thoughts about this when it's all over with. You know, we're going to say that this was done right, this was done wrong, and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, so I can't fault the NCAA, I can't fault the ACC, and or give them either too much credit either. I will say, though, what you said earlier, Jerry, about the NBA, you know, I think for – it's interesting. Because I wear both hats at AFP, as the news editor and also a very vociferous sports talker and very prolific, hopefully, sports writer. During the ACC tournament, you know, I'm there covering it. Tuesday, I'm there last week, and I'm actually covering basketball games. You know, it's kind of like, hey, wait, there's basketball going on here. Wednesday, we start seeing the flood of schools. Before sports got into this, the individual colleges and universities across the country started saying, hey, you know, don't come back from spring break. We're going to take a break. To me, that's where the tsunami started in terms of public response. It wasn't the government. The schools themselves were starting to say individually and then collectively after a point, we need to do something about this. And so we're going to implement social distancing, which was a term until last Wednesday. None of us really knew what it was. But then it really hit home. And that was one thing that affected college kids. And you're still saying, oh, the compartmentalized is college kids. But then when the news hit that Rudy Gobert had tested positive, I think that was a big national moment of, okay, this is real. And everyone else fell in line then. And I really think that it was the schools. It was then the NCAA in response to the schools saying, we're going to try to have our tournament with no fans. Then the NBA. I think those three things were sort of the big dominoes that then made the general public react, which then made the government react. If I could kind of analyze how this all came down last week.
It's going to be interesting, Chris, as it goes forward, because we live in a society that's very, very much about it being filled with people that want to tell you how it happened, why it happened, and what caused it to happen, who made it happen. And that's fine in my head once the dust settles. Once the dust settles, it's no different than how I run my own business. As you get through a situation, then you stop and say, okay, if that ever happens again, what would we do different? I don't know that there's a need for it right now in the middle of it. And again, that's just one person's opinion, but that's why, as this happened, I sat there and I openly talked about it with you about, hey, I'm not sure that we're going to continue to do podcasts in the downtime, because in my mind, I don't want to add to the list of people that are sitting here right now wanting to play Monday morning quarterback. It's a situation for me where there's going to be a ton of those stories and articles and movies and shows about it, kind of, but it needs to wait in my mind till after the fact. Let's actually get through what we're in the middle of, and then we can go back and critique and say, hey, this is what we could have done. This is what we should have done. This is what I'm glad was done. I'm just not sure of by comparison. You mentioned the NFL three times. I was waiting for that to be the next segue, if you will. Chris, one of the things you have to ask yourself where the NFL is concerned, there's a number of sports fans who are saying right now, thank God for the NFL. Thank God it's given me something to distract me. But I think there's just as many people going, what the hell are they doing? You're in a situation to where, as you said, and not to get too deep into the economics of it, where we're doing a lot of things to put our own well-being at risk, our own economy at risk. We're doing these things. How logical is it to see people giving away money to the tune of $1 billion every few days? You're looking at that. My question to you is, which side of that do you fall on? Are you thinking, well, hey, it's great that the NFL's distracting us, or you look at this and say, should they really be spending this kind of money? What kind of message are they sending?
Well, the message they're trying to send is the message that we should all be sending, in my opinion, which is, let's get this back to normal as soon as possible. In my opinion, if the NFL weren't there from a sports context to distract us, if we didn't have Tom Brady news to distract us, that's just another thing that you're taking away from us. And there certainly are people who are killjoys. When you go on social media, which I do too much, as much as I like to say I don't do it, who think that any expression of fun is a bad thing right now. I actually am looking at social media more for the funny memes from people about how difficult it is to homeschool their kids, how much they now appreciate their teachers. Those people, Chris and I talked about this on our podcast earlier today, where we talked about we've worked together at home for 20 years, and people have always asked us, how do you do it? And now they're having to work at home, a lot of folks are, at least, work at home with their spouse. And so, you know, now they're realizing that, you know, it's even harder than we've made it look. or it's not as easy as we make it look, I should say, in Crystal's perspective, because we've worked together all this time. And so the NFL is another positive distraction. Also, though, realistically, I mean, they're a business, and, you know, they have to act according to their business model. And you know, they could have certainly delayed their league year to some degree. But, you know, I'm for as many distractions as possible. You know, and here's, again, where the killjoy kind of thing comes in. I got a little frustrated the other night with an actual friend of mine. I won't mention his name, but I posted about how I was watching WWE's Monday TV show, Monday Night Raw, and this person went into a diatribe about how they're putting people at risk by having their show. Of course, they're having a show with no fans. Their wrestlers are there, just like other businesses that are continuing to operate, like supermarkets and things like that. They are testing. You know, they're screening their people. They're giving them. They're taking their temperature when they come in. You know, anybody with symptoms, stay away, etc. But this person's point was, you know, I think he even said natural selection, basically, like, you know, he doesn't like wrestling anyway, so maybe they'll all kill, you know, but maybe they'll all die of coronavirus, which I don't know. I mean, I want to have fun. I want to be able to, whatever normalcy we can preserve for ourselves these next few weeks, let's preserve it, because it sucks right now. Life is different. It's not, you know, and when we come back, there are going to be some things that don't come back with it. I mean, what we talk about, Jerry, on a regular basis will come back. It'll come back in some form. It won't be quite, you know, the NBA will probably have a year or two of economic issues just because its salary cap will be down next year, I presume. Baseball won't play, you know, anywhere near a full schedule. I think football will probably emerge unscathed. Even though we'll have to, you know, kind of see what impact not having off-season workouts will do for those guys. And the injury rate next year will probably be a little higher, and the quality of play may not be as good, but it'll still be football. But sports will be sports. You know, sports are going to come back. Sports played through World War I. Sports played through the Great Depression. Sports played through World War II. You know, movies did the same. Some people would argue that one of the greater eras of movie making was the 30s and 40s during the Great Depression and World War II. Arts and entertainment will come back. But you're going to lose your favorite restaurants. Some of your businesses that in certain communities are sustaining businesses, have lots of employees. They may be a shell of themselves or may not come back. So that's a harsh reality. So in the meantime, I've had to spend 5 minutes saying all that stuff to say, let's preserve what we can preserve in terms of fun. And to me, you know, the NFL sort of pretending like nothing's going on. Well, for them, maybe there isn't anything going on. But also, I tell you what, you know, for the first couple of days this week, I avoided ESPN's talk shows because I feared that all they would do was the gloom and doom of, well, sports are all gone, blah, blah, blah. And then I realized, hey, they're probably talking about Tom Brady. Let's turn on some of these shows. Let's turn on Golic and Golic. Let's turn on Levitard. Let's listen in on Will Cain. And, you know, they're doing their best to make a salad out of this, a chicken salad instead of chicken, out of chicken feathers instead of the other option with chicken. And I'll give them credit. You know, we're trying. And on our podcast, I think we're trying and doing a decent job too. Seth Meganson and I, for example, pretending like the NCAA tournament's going on and that we're reporting on the games. We're just trying. And so I want to give the NFL credit. They're giving us a distraction. The only criticism I'll have of the NFL is they should have convinced Tom Brady to wait like 3 weeks to sign with Tampa Bay so that we'd have to still be asking the question, where's Tom going? Because now we know. And that story's going to die out. Before we need to give that one a lot more legs than it's been getting.
It's kind of funny, Mike, not to compare Tom Brady with the Black Widow, but I thought one of the things that stuck out to me this week was the news that Marvel is going to delay the rollout of the next Avengers-related movie because it was set to open on May 1st. Yeah. What's going to be going on May 1st? There won't be any there won't be anybody in the theater, assuming that a theater could even be open. But the story with Brady is one, if we could shift back just for one more example of it, I don't know how much you saw of where Sean Payton was concerned. Obviously, the longtime coach of the New Orleans Saints, it comes out in a story that he actually has the virus and that it became relevant when he went to Arkansas to a horse race track. And I was sitting there in my mind, I'm going, okay, no, I truly stay away from social media, but I'm going, okay, I've got to see the two sides on this one. And then you have the handful of people saying, oh, man, I hope Coach Payton is right. I hope Coach Payton is okay. I hope he's healthy. Then the other people are going, why were they having horse racing in a public place that this could have possibly happened? And that's, Chris, the way it's always going to be. But the Brady story is a fun story. You know, people are trying to talk about, hey, how many times has this happened? I'm not sure that you can find where this has happened before. There's all sorts of interesting angles on it. You can compare it to Brett Favre. You can compare it to Joe Montana. Chris, but there's some pretty noticeable differences there. Aaron Rodgers was helping push Brett Favre out the door.
Yeah.
Steve Young was helping push Joe Montana out the door.
Yeah.
I we're not in a situation that someone says Peyton Manning, completely different animal. You're talking about four major surgeries. There was a question of whether he could ever play again. And then there was this guy, Andrew Luck. So the circumstances around Tom Brady going and choosing to leave New England, I don't think we could find a similar comparable situation.
Oh, no, and I saw a graphic on ESPN yesterday on SportsCenter, like the effect that he's the first player in NFL history to play 20 years with one team and then go somewhere else. Okay, well, one, how many NFL players play 20 years, much less 20 years with one team? So you could have almost put up, you know, it kind of reminds me of the Cheers episode where Cliff Clavin was on Jeopardy and was asked the final Jeopardy question. He couldn't get the answer. It was something like, you know, what do Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, and John Adams have in common? And he said, what is none of them have ever been to my house? You know, there's nothing else for this. There's no other player who's ever done what Tom Brady's done, not to mention 20 years and all the Super Bowls and all the championship games and everything else. I mean, so no, there's nothing comparable. You have to go to other sports because, and even then, you know, you think of Willie Mays, maybe with the New York Giants, San Francisco Giants, and had to finish his career up and with the Mets. You know, maybe you think, I guess there were a couple quarterbacks who try to stay on a little long. Joe Namath, you know, played with the Rams, I guess, at the end of his career. Johnny Unitas played, I can't think where Unitas played at the end of his career, but he got away from the Colts for a year or two in situations that were probably a little more similar to Brady, but not quite, obviously. But yeah, you know, Wilt Chamberlain was with the, you know, the Philadelphia Warriors, and then he finished up with the Lakers, but, you know, again, not the longevity. So you start thinking of some of those guys. I guess did Henry Aaron actually played with the Braves, and then but he's played with the Milwaukee Braves, then the Atlanta Braves, finished up with the Milwaukee Brewers. So both in his case and in Willie Mays' case, they went back to the place where they were first stars. Their teams moved, and when they finished up, they went back to their original home base. But none of those are Tom Brady. Tom Brady is the winningest quarterback in NFL history, always will be at this stage. No one's going to ever approach his record of winning it. His and Belichick's record of winning. Those guys did it together. Belichick's still there. So that's another factor, another layer on this. Belichick, it's not like he's Brady's moving on because Belichick's leaving. And Brady would be then saying, well, you know, if I'm going to play more, I want to do it with either do it with a new guy here or a new guy somewhere else. I might as well go somewhere else. That really adds a layer to this, Jerry, that is fascinating. I'd love to know what was really going on the last few months back and forth behind the scenes there at Patriots camp, you know, the Patriots offices there as this was unfolding and know what – you have to presume there's some sort of rift there between Belichick and Brady. But, wow, the most successful relationship probably in all of sports history. I guess you could argue the Red Auerbach, Bill Russell – won more titles, but that was in a much smaller NBA. So that's where I would throw this Brady-Belichick pairing as the most successful in sports history in terms of championships and they're breaking up, and they're both going to continue on. I would love to know what happened there.
Well, it was funny, Chris, that you would word it that way because, you know, my wife actually, the day she heard it, and she was in the other room working, and she heard it, she said, explain that one to me. Why did that happen? And I said, I think the books will be written about why that happened, and there's going to be two sides to it. But, Chris, that's the fun kind of debate that should be there. You know, instead of debating who did what to who, ask yourself. It's kind of like the Alabama-Auburn football game, if you will. We're talking about two Titans here, and they're going to go in their own direction. They're going to go in their separate paths. That's the question. Who are you pulling for? There's your social media question. There's your Facebook question, if you will. Uh-huh. Instead of trying to find somebody to blame for something, ask yourself, the most public couple in all of sports history, in my mind, just got divorced. Who gets the kids?
And what does New England do now? Now that they've got that glaring hole that they have not had for 20 years, there was that one year where Brady got injured in the preseason and Matt Castle stepped in and still led them to the playoffs. Actually, they went 11-5 and they were a wild card that year. But yeah, where do they go? You know, the quarterback carousel has taken an interesting turn. So as a result, I've got to think, between those two, if I'm Belichick without a quarterback, or if I'm Brady and I had a choice, I mean, he could have gone to a number of places out your way. You're a Vegas guy. He could have gone out to the Raiders. There was talk about potentially San Francisco, which would have probably resulted in a de facto trade trade and everything but trade name, because Jimmy Garoppolo, who of course was understudy to Tom Brady in New England for a few years, would then be expendable and maybe could go back to New England, and that would be a neat fit for New England. But there's no need for San Francisco to do anything to a guy who took his team to the Super Bowl last year. Now, Phillip Rivers has already signed on with Indianapolis. I love that move, by the way. I think from the standpoint of a fit kind of situation, Phillip Rivers fits in really, really nicely there in Indianapolis. I think there's a lot of pieces around him. But to go back to Tampa Bay, Bruce Arians as a coach. Bruce Arians, Virginia Tech alum. I had to throw that in there for ACC fans listening in out there. Bruce Arians has coached in the Super Bowl. You know, Jameis Winston, he had the 30 for 30 years, we're hearing it called, 30 touchdowns, 30 interceptions. He led the league in passing, and so he's now expendable. But what you're doing if you're Bruce Arians is, okay, for Jameis Winston to throw 30 touchdown passes and lead the league in passing yards, what that must suggest is there are pieces around a quarterback that you can make work, right? Because you don't throw for all those yards, you don't throw for all those touchdown passes if you don't have a line that can block for you, a running game that can take pressure off for you, and then receivers who can run routes and catch the ball. And so what you're saying, if you're the Tampa Bay front office, is we're replacing a guy who led the league in passing yards and threw 30 touchdowns with a guy who's more efficient. And we think that guy is going to make us better. Brady, again, had the choice to go wherever he wanted to go to a great degree. He chose there. From a standpoint of, I don't know, from a standpoint of Q rating and marketing and everything else, I thought if it was simply about that, he'd either be in L.A., San Francisco, or Vegas. He chose Tampa. He knows something maybe the rest of us don't. So if you ask me that question, Jerry, I'm going to go with Brady's going to do better in this than Belichick.
Well, here's a couple of things. First of all, if you're a Daniel Jones fan, which I obviously am, you're appreciative of the fact that Jameis Winston had the 30 for 30 season, because he's the only guy that had more turnovers than Daniel did from the quarterback position. So for the thing, Chris, I'm looking at is, again, I like intrigue. I like, how do you make something really, really interesting? And they're talking about all of these options for New England and who's going to quarterback New England. And in my head, if I was writing this story, I go out and I find a way to convince Eli to come to New England. I just think it makes for a great theater if you will. Here you got a guy, everybody talks about Belichick and Brady has six. Who's the reason they don't have eight?
Yeah.
You're in a situation to where, again, I wasn't the first person to say it out loud. I read a couple articles about it, and they're saying that, well, Eli Manning has no interest in being a backup quarterback. And in my head, I'm going, okay, that makes perfect sense. But who's he going to be backing up? You're in a situation to where the live options that they have, and if you're Belichick, you have to accept this as a challenge as well. You had the year. They showed the stat of the quarterback, the one loss record for all the games that Brady missed due to injury and suspension. And the number was pretty impressive. And it was with three different quarterbacks. So I'm just as interested now in seeing who New England is going to put in that spot. And I'm not sure. You mentioned Rivers, and I like the fact that the Rivers and Colts marriage is a one-year deal, $25 million, but for 1 year. So now you've got a spare quarterback in Indianapolis. It's Brissett, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, another ACC player. Then you're in a situation where you have Winston, another ACC player. You've got Cam Newton, who's intriguing. But as you talked about, he has questions about how healthy he is, and I'm not sure whose team doctor is going to be the one trying to make that decision. I believe that they're trying to find some scenario where it's a neutral doctor. But you're in a situation where somebody – if you're Belichick, and right now it looks like that Brady was the one that forced this play. Again, that's just the thought process. He's the one that announced, hey, I'm going. And if you're Belichick and you've got one shot at proving it's your system, more so than a player in your system, who do you want to be your quarterback this year? Knowing who's available to you, who would you want to have be your quarterback?
And for just a minute, let me break the fourth wall here and say for 15 minutes, we've been talking hardcore sports. So that's great. Who do I want? And I'd say this too about what New England has been able to do. You noted the record that the Patriots have had over the years when Brady's been out. He missed an entire season, and Matt Castle took him to the playoffs. He had that one season where he missed the first four games due to the suspension from the late date. And also, I think they went 4-0 during that stretch. A really solid record. A difference, though, the talent around Brady, around the quarterback in those years, a little different. I think you sense some frustration out of Brady last year. Belichick decided to build his team last year more as a defensive dominant team. And for a while there, they were putting up some almost historic numbers defensively through like 10 or 11 games. You know, they were on pace to be the best defense ever, fizzled down the stretch. But, in a salary cap era, you can only do so much from a roster construction standpoint. If you overload in one area, you can't just go out and spend more on wide receivers and tight ends. And so, the weapons on offense were not what Brady had in previous years. And, you know, then all of a sudden the questions were coming up, is Brady deteriorating? You know, is this the end of Brady? I think he wants, and maybe that's a factor in this too, Jerry, is, you know, he wants to prove that he's still got it. And I'll say again, he's going to a place in Tampa where they put up some big numbers offensively last year. The one big issue for Tampa last year, all the turnovers by the quarterback. And it's interesting, he's replacing a guy there, Tom Brady will be, in Jameis Winston, whose last pass as a Buccaneer will be very much like his last pass as a Patriot, a pick six. But Winston threw quite a few of them over his time there. As talented as Winston is, fair or not, he put up great numbers and just didn't win enough. And so Brady's going to a place where he thinks he can win. So I don't know that, like, for example, there might be people say, okay, Jameis Winston put up all those numbers there. Why doesn't he just go to New England? I'm not sure if he's a fit there. And Rivers, boy, if Rivers hadn't already signed with the Colts, if I'm Kraft, if I'm Belichick, I would have thrown a feeler out there. Hey, Phillip, we need a veteran quarterback to come lead our offense. He'd have been a great guy to fit in. I like your Eli suggestion. I'm intrigued by that. I'm pretty sure this is the case that Eli's contract with the Giants was up. You know, if you retire in the middle of a contract, the team that you retired from still has your rights of at least a first refusal. But I think his contract had actually come up. And so he should be, if he would want to be, he would be a free agent. If you went and did something like that and brought Eli in, it'll be very much like what Indianapolis is doing with Philip Rivers. We know it's a one-year deal with Rivers, and who knows, they might sign him for a second year if year one goes well and he's still able to play and the Colts still want him to play. But all you're really doing if you're the Colts bringing Philip Rivers on is buying time. You're buying time to draft another quarterback, trade for a young quarterback, and develop that guy behind your guy. And so if you're New England and you were to buy some time with Eli Manning for a year or two, you better have your eyes on who your backup's going to be, whether it's the guy already there behind Brady, whether you draft somebody here in April. But you got to get it right, because all you're doing going with a veteran quarterback, and actually Tampa's in the same place, all you're doing going with that veteran quarterback is you're kind of maximizing your next year or two, but at the expense of perhaps your long-term future. So whoever you pick up free agent-wise, trade-wise, or draft-wise, boy, you better get that right, because if you don't, you're going to be in the depths for a while.
You have to remember, Chris, as I look at things, I'm in a situation to where, say, how a certain fan or a fan base might look at something, I tend to look at things from the role of executive producer. I'm trying to look at something and saying, what would make this can't miss television? And that's where the Eli angle comes in from. But I was, in my mind, I was sure that Brady would have ended up in Las Vegas. Because assuming that there is a season next year, later this year, and we have no reason to think otherwise, the only place that was more logical for him to go was San Francisco, to go home. And Vegas is a short loop from San Francisco. And for at least a year or two, it's going to be the coolest show in town. I had the privilege of getting to look behind the curtain where the stadium is concerned. It's going to be to football what Jerry Jones did down in the Dallas area, what Arthur Blank and the folks in Atlanta did. Chris, it's not too often that you get to build something that is so cool that you want to attend something one time just to experience the venue. Yeah. Those are far and few between. It made so much sense from a script standpoint to have Brady go from Belichick to Gruden. And, you know, I'm not saying that Gruden is the equivalent of Belichick, because I don't think Belichick has an equivalent, at least not in the NFL. I felt it would have been a good story, and I thought it was interesting that they went and signed Mariota to compete with Carr.
Yeah.
Because I also believe that the Raiders, now again, they went for a 2-point conversion on the last play of the last game of the regular season, didn't get it, ended up losing the game to finish 7-9. But they have went from being an embarrassment, and the Mac situation didn't help anything, to being back on the cusp of being a competitive football team. And again, the new digs are going to be something. So yeah, I thought that Brady going there would have been way cool. You mentioned Virginia Tech alum as far as Bruce goes, the head coach. Also, Chris, you got to take a look at who all he's mentored from the quarterback position. He spent some time in Pittsburgh, so he worked with Big Ben. He obviously spent some time in Indianapolis, so he worked with Peyton Manning. You're in a situation to where I know I'm missing somebody. Who did he have? Oh, there was one of the other Hall of Fame quarterbacks that he had spent some time with, and everybody talks about him being a player's coach, and the stories, the behind the scenes stories. It makes it look like, I got to think that the environment is going to be more fun in Tampa Bay than it was in New England. Think that's a safe bet?
I think it is. You know, it's the kind of thing where, yeah, he's exciting. He's the new toy. You know, I was when I was on during the workday with ESPN Radio on as they're talking football all day. One of the reporters noted that they had just heard from a Tampa Bay fan who was on the phone trying to buy season tickets right after the news hit that Brady was signing, and talked about being on this long, hours-long wait to be able to buy season tickets. So it's the new it's the cool thing. It's the new thing in town, so to speak, and that's good. I mean, it's again, it's, you know, in this time, it's great to have a distraction like that. And also, yeah, there's I don't know that there's any pressure on Brady. Nobody expects him to go to Tampa Bay and win a Super Bowl. But if he gets that team back, you know, they were in a Super Bowl when Gruden was the coach there. Actually, won a Super Bowl back early 2000s, maybe 2004 or so. So this is a franchise that has had that success, but it's been a while. Honestly, it's been quite a while for Tampa Bay and for their fans. And so if he just gets them back to the playoffs. And they're a relevant team. You know, they're meaningful. They're playing meaningful games in November and December and have a chance to do something. Then he succeeded, you know. And also from his standpoint, again, I think that, you know, the whispers about his Tom deteriorating in front of our eyes here, I wrote a column about that, actually, and I pointed out that, you know, I was and am still a big Peyton Manning fan. And, you know, if you strip away the championship wins, I think Peyton's a better quarterback than Brady when you go head-to-head. But it's hard to take away the championship wins. But I just love Manning, love what he did for football, love his sense of humor. And but his last year, he had when he went out to Denver after that career-threatening injury, and I agree with you, Jerry, Indianapolis, there's no faulting them for the move they made. His career seemed like it was over. And they were fortunate to find a guy like Andrew Luck in the draft as a result of their decision to cut ties. But, you know, Manning, he had those record-setting years. I think it was three really incredible, huge years. His last year, he was a game manager. You know, his arm wasn't the same. You know, he aged in front of us. Now, they won the Super Bowl, which is interesting. They had that great defense, and Manning didn't make mistakes. But – Brady last year wasn't a game manager. He still was putting up some good numbers. Yeah, they weren't scoring points like they had in the past few years, but his passing numbers were in line with you know, his career numbers. And, you know, so I think that when he goes to Tampa Bay with Bruce Arians as a coach, with the weapons he has around him there, he's going to show you. He's basically going to kind of do – in a way, I kind of look at this as Brett Favre. And, of course, Brett Favre desperately wanted to get to Minnesota so he could, you know, quarterback a game or two against Green Bay because he felt like they, you know, cut ties with him too soon. You know, Brady intentionally went to the other conference. There's no – he wants to get revenge on Belichick. I guess unless they make the Super Bowl in Tampa, New England Super Bowl, which will be an all-time record grab. But I think he just wants to go and prove himself and say maybe there's an aspect too, Jerry. I don't know. I'm kind of thinking out loud. Maybe there's an aspect of, you know, people say the only reason that we won these was we were together, me and Bill Belichick. He would love to go down and win a Super Bowl with someone else just to be able to say – kind of like Kobe could say, "Hey Shaq, I didn't need you. I won without you." Shaq could also say, "Hey Kobe, I didn't need you. I won one with Dwayne Wade without you." So maybe there's a little aspect here of Tom wanting to be able to say, "Hey, I was a good quarterback, and I did it without Belichick as well."
Yeah, Chris, I think that's a huge part of it in my mind. Again, I have no inside information to that, but it sure feels that way. It's a situation of. And that's what I'm saying. When you've watched them, and it's kind of funny because one of the things I watched for what I think was the 16th time this week was the 30 for 30 on hating Christian Leitner. And it was I thought Rob Lowe did a great job with that one. I find it highly entertaining. And it's a situation to where they make reference to the Patriots. And the Patriots are a situation to where, now, again, you mentioned how many ties I have to places. We lived in Boston twice. We're in a situation to where the Patriots are concerned, if you're a fan, you love these guys. If you're not a fan, you what? You despise these guys. They're what's wrong with football. They're a different version of the Dallas Cowboys. So now you have these two guys going in their own direction, and now you have to decide, for if you're not a fan, you have to decide who's the lesser of the two evils. Who are you going to pull for? Let that be the question for next season. Are you going to pull for Belichick to outdo Brady, or are you going to pull for Brady to outdo Belichick? That's a great conversation point of, you know, you could do the over-under angle. How many games do you think Belichick's going to win? How many games do you think Brady's going to win? And then you have that other piece of the story that isn't going to go away, and that's the Tampa Bay does have highly skilled wide receivers. There are people that will argue that they have the best tandem in the league. So then you have the Antonio Brown angle. So what was your first take, your first take when you, the first time you heard somebody saying, does this mean Antonio Brown, who befriended Brady, could possibly end up in Tampa Bay?
I actually hadn't considered that yet. Brown is trying to rehab his reputation. He's his own worst enemy, so who knows, he might go out and do something silly again too. But it wouldn't surprise me, I guess, because nothing in the NFL ever surprises anybody. I mean, not only the baggage though with Brown in terms of, you know, the relationships he cut with not just individuals but with teams and with the league that he's now half-heartedly trying to repair. But you got to think too, he's a 31-year-old wide receiver. And, you know, there have been guys who've been successful in their 30s. Jerry Rice had a prolific career. Certainly still Larry Fitzgerald, Chris Carter, he was a pass guy who was productive into his 30s. But Randy Moss had some good years in his 30s. But the wear and tear on that position, all the hits you take, can be an issue. So, you know, if he's going to hold out, if he's going to think he's going to get the kind of money he got both from Oakland and then from New England last year, he's crazy. And so that would be one thing. And plus, you know, you have to wonder if you're Tampa, do we risk becoming another circus like these other places that he basically, you know, he obviously ruined the Raiders last year for a while. That was you mentioned they were 7-9 and were a 2-point conversion away from being 8-8 this year. You know, that was a team that obviously he had played on that team. They would have probably, you know, they could have very easily been a playoff team. But then, you know, he leaves them in such a lurch, both salary cap wise, roster wise, big hole in the roster. Do we want to risk that here in Tampa? You know, we just signed Tom Brady. We just got this guy who is the generational quarterback, the best quarterback of all time in lots of metrics. Do we want to, we brought that in. It's a positive thing for us. Do we want to risk that by bringing in this joker? I don't know. I mean, that's a question. They're not the only team making that question. There are 31 other teams, I'm sure, that would love to have a guy with his talent, but really have to question whether or not they want a guy like that in their locker room.
It's really interesting because if you were running down the names of receivers from in their 30s, we talked about it for a long time about the Patriots and it being the Patriot way. And one of the more bizarre signings I thought that had taken place was when Randy Moss went to New England. And I've always been probably more of a Moss fan than the average person, only because I've spent a great deal of time hanging out with Ness for 10 years in the part of West Virginia that Moss is from. And, you know, it was kind of funny in that when Moss went to New England, I questioned whether or not he would be able to make that adjustment and actually become part of that group. And I think that if Chris, in my mind, when he was there, that's when they were at their best.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, okay, it used to be that, you know, prior to that, it was the Raiders who were trying to go the other direction. You know, they were trying to go out and find every nutcase, head job, crazy person that there was to come out and play for them. And these people were resurrecting their careers. And this goes all the way back to, you know, people like Lyle Alzado. And that was the way the team was built. And then New England was actually, in my mind, built the polar opposite of that. So Moss being that productive at that point in his career, but you're correct with Brown, everything that Brown's ever done, he's done in such a public forum that I just think that we talk about the 24/7 world of things. I'm not sure anybody is going to comfortably take that risk and bring him in. It'll be interesting to see if he does get another chance, because some people are unfortunate that every mistake they make gets caught on film. Antonio Brown actually helps put it on film, which I'm not sure which coach or which general manager is going to be thinking to themselves, hey, I can do this. But talking about, you know, the quarterbacks that will even tie back to the ACC, did you have any thoughts when you saw that Teddy Bridgewater, again, Louisville Cardinal, was able to get 3 years and $60 million from the Carolina Panthers?
No, not really surprised. He was a guy that before his injury in Minnesota was on his way to being a potentially frontline starter. And so I guess the only surprise would be that, you know, he overcame the injury issue. Minnesota went in a different direction, got Kirk Cousins, and went with, because, you know, Bridgewater is a smaller quarterback. He's not your prototypical 6'4", 230, you stand back in the pocket and never get knocked down kind of guy. He's a mobile quarterback. When I say that, he's not – he doesn't run unnecessarily. He's not Lamar Jackson in that sense, but he can – kind of like a Tyrod Taylor, a Tyrod Taylor 2.0 in the sense that he's a little bigger. He's got a great arm, good numbers. And he looked good, obviously looked really good when he filled in for Drew Brees last year. The Saints didn't miss a beat with Bridgewater. So if there were any questions about Bridgewater – they would have been answered there. He did his time. He did his apprenticeship. He did a great job with a playoff team. I guess I'm going back and forth on that. I would still wonder, part of me would still wonder about that injury issue from now a few years ago. But then, yeah, I guess we did see enough of him last year as a starter, filling in admirably for Drew Brees to say, I would do that. And I would go more in that direction, certainly than the Cam Newton direction. And I also said something about Cam Newton, though, too. The people who know Cam Newton best, Carolina Panthers, team that drafted him, had him take him to a Super Bowl, are saying that they would rather take a risk on a guy who got injured himself a few years ago than take the risk on Cam Newton. So I think that decision speaks volumes in two ways. One, very positive for Teddy Bridgewater, but also, two, that can't be good news for Cam Newton.
Well, the last NFL question I'll have for you, Chris, you mentioned the getting the season tickets for Tampa Bay, and I had a big kick out of it because late in the year, Dick Vitale was doing a game, and he was making a pitch to get Tom Brady during the basketball game to get Tom Brady to come to Tampa. Dick Vitale is a season ticket holder, and he was telling him, he said, if you come down here, I'll be your chauffeur. And I remember laughing out loud listening to Dickie B say this. So in my head, that's just a commercial waiting to happen. I don't know what company you're going to be advertising it for, but I could imagine Vitale picking up Brady and driving him someplace. But no, my question is this. The season ticket numbers went up. They went up immediately. And in the process, Tampa Bay raised the season ticket price. Any issues there at all?
Maybe in the context of where we are right now, but if you're looking longer term, maybe not. I mean, in the immediate It's not good PR in the immediate time to be raising prices for anything. But, you know, again, eventually this shall pass, right? So maybe the only issue would be that they could have waited to announce that more into a better time. And that may have been a few months from now, just after things maybe have settled back down and the economy starts to pick back up. We're seeing projections that if the, you know, there's a lot of ifs, everything right now is an if, but if the economy, if we have to maintain this social distancing for the entire second quarter, that GDP might go down as much as 14%. And that would be like Great Depression level, one quarter, I will emphasize, not 10 years, one quarter level of GDP departure. And so I don't want to say it's going to be a Great Depression. I'm just saying that that would be equivalent, you know, that one quarter GDP down would be comparable to numbers that we haven't seen since then. Presumably then once we get things back up and running, you know, things will start to pick back up. That's when you could probably more confidently say, give us more money. Right now, I'm not sure you want to say give us more money. So maybe that's just bad optics.
It's interesting. I would view the timing of it just, but again, they just shelled out quite a bit of money there to him. But yeah, the timing of it, it did make it seem a little bit interesting to me. Chris, I wanted to throw out one idea is that the NBA is trying to find some way to do something. We mentioned the 3-on-3 stuff, but the NBA is talking about, hey, we'd like to do something for the fans. And I'm going to age myself a little bit here. I'm not sure if you're going to remember this or not, but back before the NBA became a big thing, one of the things they used to do at halftime of the NBA games, and I'm not sure if you're going to remember this or not, is they had a horse tournament. And I don't know if that brings back any memories or not, but back then I was in my Pistol Pete Maravich phase and loved everything that Maravich did, and nobody wanted to play Maravich in the horse tournament because of all the trick shots that he could do. And it was something that back then I found to be highly entertaining. And I'm sitting there going, as they're looking for something they can do, I'm not saying it's going to solve everything, but if you could find something to do that you didn't have to have a bunch of people to do, and you're sitting there, and some of this stuff would be, I think, could be pretty entertaining. I would love to see a game of horse, say, between Joe Harris and Steph Curry.
Yeah.
You're in a situation to where, and what would it take? You wouldn't even have to have them in the same gym. You just would have to have them, you know, obviously with all of the technology we have. But just, it's like the people who you see that are chess players that play chess through the mail type thing.
Yeah,
you'd have one person with a camera and two people playing, something to do that would be some level of entertainment, because I'm not sure. I understand what Adam Silver's thinking. I understand what he's trying to do. I just saying, dig a little deeper, think about something. And again, as I asked the question to you, I'm thankful that the NFL is conducting business right now, because it gives people something to do. It gives them something to report on. It gives them something to follow in lack of there being a game. But there's my pitch to the NBA. Do you remember any of the old horse games?
You know, I played. I don't remember there being tournaments, but as a kid growing up and being a basketball player, yeah, I played horse millions of times. I'll probably not exaggerate when I say millions of times. Horse was a favorite game growing up, because, you know, you different skill levels to get involved in horse, you know, to a degree. I can see who's listening to the podcast right now. I don't see my buddy Jay Whitaker listening in right now. He may pick us up on the archive. Jay Whitaker and I would have some epic horse matches, horse games. When we'd be at the gym, one of the gyms on grounds at UVA, and there'd be nobody else to play, either a 3-on-3 or a 5-on-5 game with, and we'd just be there by ourselves after lifting weights. Man, oh man, you know, the I was a trick shot guy. I don't want to claim to be Pistol Pete, but maybe Pistol Pete for a poor man. The shots behind the backboard, from the angles from behind the backboard, banking 3-point shots in and calling the bank. You know, so if you called bank, you had to shoot the bank. Half court shots, which were, and I would say half court jump shot, not just heave it, but you had to shoot a jump shot. And Jay would do his tricks too. We had our, we were both, for short white guys, I guess if you're a short white guy and you play competitive pickup basketball, you better be able to shoot the dang thing. And, we could. So, you know, horse is awesome. I like what the Big Three is talking about doing with the 3-on-3 tournament, where you could sequester the players and thus not expose anyone. You know, I mentioned that WWE and the other wrestling company in the U.S. is of significant note, AEW. They're continuing to produce their shows, their content weekly, in a safe way, you know, where there's no fans involved. But, you know, they're still in arenas. They still they're trying to give off as best they can without a crowd the feel of a professional wrestling match. It's in a safe way. WWE is going to go through with its WrestleMania and make it a 2-day event. Now, what they're going to do in line with this too, since there are no fans, what I'm reading is they're going to actually tape the matches and then just present them as if they're live. But so again, to emphasize safety and do it from different venues, again, to emphasize safety, not having a lot of people in one place. So really, you know, there's things like that. And you know, I saw when I watch ESPN, when I watch SportsCenter, when I leave that on, I see that they're still trying to have fun with it. They'll do their daily top 10 and bottom 10 plays. And right now it's just stuff that we're all posting to social media. You know, the fun things we're doing, kids dunking basketballs on Nerf hoops and, you know, everything you can imagine as far as that goes, being creative. But yeah, you know, from that macro standpoint, you know, I think, I like what the NBA, I like what Silver has at least floated, whether or not, you know, because it looks like, you know, I'm saying this, and hopefully we don't go back to the archives in a few months, say Chris was overly optimistic at this, but, you know, what I'm hearing from what I hear, I'm hearing the same things you were hearing, but I'm hearing with what I think is an educated ear, maybe as a news person, having done this for 25 years, you know, it would not surprise me if, for example, the NBA might not be able to get going at some point in May. But it's still this is March. I mean, May seems so far off. And so, yeah, if we could do some things to entertain each other, and if a horse tournament, why not do a virtual dunk contest? You know, like you were saying, Jerry, they don't need to be in the same arena. So why not do? Hey, let's get the best dunkers in their gyms, and let's you know, let's have a dunk off and have some fun that way. The shooting contest will be awesome. You know, you could do the same then in baseball. Get a machine, get a guy out there, and you know, have a virtual home run contest. You know, I don't know that, like, football tries to do skills things, and I'm not as interested in seeing a quarterback throw to a target 20 yards down the field. But the home run contest, the 3-point contest, a dunk contest, things like that could definitely be something that, you know, could get us interested. Hey, it would give people something to bet on. That gets Vegas happy and New Jersey happy again, and online bettors happy again. And you know, there's a lot of aspects that could come out of that could be positive, just to divert our attention from where it is right now.
Yeah, that's the main thing. And I know that you're another difference, because there's all sorts of differences for you and I. One difference for me, Chris, is I live and die with the Marvel Group. I think that what they do is phenomenal to carry on a story for 10 years. So I'm a Marvel junkie, no questions asked. And there's a scene where they're trying to do something crazy. And I'm going to paraphrase it, but, you know, somebody's saying, hey, it's going to work. And Captain America responds by saying, yes, it's going to work. Why? Because I don't know what I'm going to do if it doesn't. This is the world I live in, Chris. It's going to fix. It's going to straighten itself out.
Yeah.
It's going to get better. Why? Because it's the world that I live in.
Yeah.
The day that you fall victim to giving up hope, that's a sad, sad day. Yes. And again, you're in a situation to where it's easy to be scared. It's easy to be nervous. I'm surrounded by the majority of the people that live where I live are retired people.
Yeah.
Who are you being told is the most at risk here? Older people. You've got to find some way to stay positive. You've got to find a way to look at this and say, this will pass. And that's how I have to look at what the NFL is doing. These 32 guys that own these teams, obviously, they're fairly well off. You have some people with a little bit of money, and seeing it go forward, seeing it continue to operate, it fuels the hope. And that's what it all comes down to, is if you have to have hope, because if you don't have hope, it's going to get real scary the next few weeks.
You know, and I think we've done a good job today. We got into a deep, much deeper, because honestly, we usually cover college sports. We cover college basketball, college football, and we'll talk about other sports. But when we go into the depth that we go into, it's the most important sports that have ever existed in man, and that's ACC football and ACC basketball. Everything else is at best number three in the world. But we did an ACC level discussion on the free agency quarterback carousel there, Jerry, for about 30 minutes or more that I'm very proud of. That was pretty good. That felt pretty good. And so for those listening in either live, those who are listening in our archive later, that was awesome to be able to just to dive into something and make it as important as it was. Because as of last Tuesday, it was important. And like you said, Jerry, it, whether it's a couple weeks, a few weeks, whatever, it's going to be, again, important, seemingly so, or we'll make it so, right? Because, you know, we all have what we think's important. Concerts are important, and basketball and football and baseball games are important. Right now, we know other things are important. But it's going to get back there. And Crystal, actually, when we did we've been doing a daily news podcast each morning at 10 o'clock Eastern. And she ended yesterday's with a nice poem, and I don't certainly have it, but I remember among the things it said is, you know, when this is over with, we'll appreciate things more maybe now than we certainly did. It's the things you take for granted, being able to go to a restaurant, being able to, like for me, when she read the poem, it made me think of being at JPJ on March 7th and that UVA Louisville game, or the week before, February 29th, the UVA Duke game at JPJ. And just being part of that loud crowd, and everything about that basketball game seemed like the most important thing in the world. And I kept looking. I've got my Apple Watch with my heart rate monitor, and my heart rate was over 100 beats per minute there at various times in those two games. And how that obviously means it was important to me, right? And I'm catching myself watching TV right now. And when you watch TV, we sat down for the first time last night. We've been so busy here AFP news-wise that we've had very little time to ourselves. All these other people are talking about how bored they are, and we haven't had a chance to be bored yet. We're so busy with the news. But we watched some TV last night, and it struck me. We were watching some catching up on our Will and Grace binge watching, and they're in a restaurant. They're eating in a restaurant. There's other people there. There was one where they went to a show. They went to a baseball game. Like, oh my God. So when this is over, we'll appreciate those things more. And it's almost like we wish we didn't have to have things taken away from us for a brief time to make us appreciate them more. But Jerry, I am never going to be more happy than the first time I get to go to a baseball game, or a basketball game or a football game. You and I are both on the same boat in this. There are people who are sports fans, especially sports writers and broadcasters, who can get cynical about it and say, "Oh well, I do this all the time. It's no big deal." We're not in that camp. But I'm even less than whatever sliver of me was left there saying, "Oh, I do this all the time. It's no big deal." I cannot wait to hear the first roar of a crowd. I'm looking forward to that day.
Well, it's going to be interesting, Chris. I shared a little bit of this thought process kind of after the fact when we hung up last time. But again, my outlook where sports is concerned is it's not how I make a living. I have a living. I make a living. I have a job. Sports truly is for me. It's just fun. It's just it's a it's a it's a getaway. It's an escape. It's a relaxation. And I joke about the NFL. You know, you got 32 teams playing football in the NFL. I've lived in the home market of 18 of them. You're not going to play a football game in a Super Bowl that I don't have a tie to one of the teams. So I'm not experiencing it from a live and die, oh, no, my team didn't win type mentality. I look at this going, man, I'm going to get 3 hours or maybe 3.5 hours where I don't have to think about anything else. I can just enjoy the moment. And that it makes it easier for me to have a positive attitude where sports is concerned. I don't have to report on it. I don't have to fill space. I don't have to worry about, again, oh, wow, if I don't do my job well enough in the sports world, someone's going to take my job from me. It's, you know, when that's why I feel for all the people right now from the broadcast standpoint. You're sitting here and this is how they make their livelihood. And I'm going, I at some point, you're going to run out of things to talk about as far as the, especially where the people on television are concerned, because it's kind of boxed in of what they can talk about. Or thankfully, you and I don't have that problem.
We don't. And, you know, it's because this is fun. So we're entertaining. And you know what? There some of the shows are already making a good adjustment. Tony Kornheiser's talked about how he's fortunate, like kind of like we are. You know, you and I have covered a lot of sports over the years, and you know, so maybe as need be, you just fill in with stories. I've talked with Jerry Ratcliffe about that over at jerryratcliffe.com. We work closely with Jerry, and boy, I had him on a podcast this week, you know, he hosts his own radio show, and the only weakness I would say about the radio show is he's asking other people questions. I want to hear what Jerry's got to say, so. I had him on my show, and it was just me asking a quick question and letting Jerry talk for a long period of time about the various things in UVA sports history. There are things like that that we can do. I say we, you and I specifically, we always do that. But, I mean, we as a sports media industry right now can do that, can provide value. And we're doing it. And you know, we'll bring out our if we have to, you know, if we start running out of topics, we'll easily be able to Mount Rushmore a bunch of things. We can do some brackets of some sort and argue about who should win and who should lose and all this kind of stuff, the favorite first baseman of all time. And I mean, there's, you know, things that not only pass the time, but, you know, I mean, we got a bunch of listeners on the line with us right now that are entertaining, you know, and will entertain us all. Maybe get us, again, give us a few minutes of respite as we're waiting to get things back to normal. So, yeah, Jerry, you always do a good job helping book these shows. And I have every bit of confidence that you will find twice a week roughly 2 hours of stuff for us to talk about. I'm not worried about that at all.
But it's kind of funny because remember, next time you want to throw out a question, and it's an easy one because it's A or B, ask your listeners, who are you going to pull for next year? You're going to pull for Tom Brady or you're going to pull for Bill Belichick? That's the question of the day. And feel free to let us know what your thoughts are on that. And if so, if you're up to it, let us know why that is. Because
yeah, again, we should put something about that on Facebook. We could do that this weekend. And then we can come back with the answers on Monday. I think that's a great idea. And then you and I can we've already weighed in a bit, but we can certainly, you know, maybe the folks out there can persuade us. That'd be interesting too. So do your best to persuade us. I'm hard to persuade, by the way. But so if you break through, we may have to give you a T-shirt or something. I don't know. my wife will tell you I'm hard to persuade. So, but yeah, congratulations if you can.
Well, Chris, it's been a lot of fun. I'm sure everybody back in Virginia appreciates how much you guys are, how much effort you're putting into this process. I know it's filling a huge void. And keep up the good work, and I will. I'll look forward to talking with you again on Monday.
All right. Well, good deal. I'll play the bumper music to get us out of here. For Jerry Carter, I'm Chris Graham. We're signing off. Everyone, have a great weekend.